Godzilla is now in New York City.
Monster 01 and 02, commence the attack.
Welcome back to Stomp This Way. This week, we're going back to Toho again. Classic 60s era Toho for a, maybe not a kaiju film, kaiju adjacent.
Yeah.
There is, briefly, a giant-ish creature, Griffin, in this.
And giant rats.
There are man-sized rats and bat, rat, man. Creature things.
Yes.
But we'll get to all that. But Andrew, tell us, what film are we reviewing?
The film we're reviewing this week is none other than Latitude Zero.
That is right. And for this viewing, there is an American cut.
Yes.
And a Japanese cut. There's actually like four cuts of this film on DVD. Tokyo Shock released, I call it the American cut. It's technically the international cut, I think. And they also have the Japanese cut. We watched the international cut for this review. I can't remember what we watched the first time we watched it.
I think we watched the international then, too.
Maybe at some point we should watch the Japanese cut. But just so you know, we watched the international cut. But anyway, you want to get into some alternate titles?
Oh, you know it.
All right. Well, of course, we have the correct translation of the Japanese title, which is The Great Latitude Zero Operation. They also, in Japan, had a different title for it, apparently, at the Toho Champion Festival, where they premiered the film. They called it The Great Undersea War, The Great Latitude Zero Operation. And their English title at this festival was Latitude Zero, Battle in the Ocean.
Ooh.
In West Germany, they called it U-4000, Panic in the Ocean. You know, like U-40 boats,
yeah.
Submarines, you get it. In Spain, they called it Where the World Ends. The Dutch title is Panic in the Deep Sea. And in the Netherlands, they called it The Destruction of the Alpha.
Ooh.
Although I'm pretty sure the Alpha...
It survives.
Survives. So maybe they should have called it The Destruction of the Black Shark. That's not here than there. Anyway, some brief production trivia. This film is a co-production between American and Japanese studios, specifically Toho, obviously, and a production company called Ambassador Productions. Based on an early 40s NBC... serialized radio show by Ted Sherman, however you say that. So the show was called Latitude Zero, and the plot was very similar. There was like 17 episodes. I think only the first one is actually preserved anywhere, but the basic plot is the same. I think they changed the ship names and stuff, but the basic setup at least is very similar. They actually filmed this movie in English. And Akira Takarada and Akihiko Hirata and all those guys were actually delivering their lines in English. So I thought they had just found some people that were Japanese with Japanese accents to dub over. But according to Wikipedia, that was actually Takarada and the other guys
attempting to speak English.
I mean, they spoke it pretty well.
Yeah.
But they were actually delivering their lines in English. This isn't a film that, you know, they filmed in Japanese and then
dubbed
some American
over.
Company got a hold of it and dubbed it over and released it in the U.S. This was filmed with the intention of releasing in both countries. Mm-hmm. And of course, they filmed it in English because that has the bigger potential market. But Ambassador Productions went bankrupt during the filming of the movie. So Toho ended up picking up most of the production budget, and they filmed it in Japan and did all that. So,
that happens.
apparently, the American producers wanted Linda Haynes, who plays Dr. Anne, whatever her name was, in the movie. She is scantily clad
from
a lot of the movie. But they wanted her to be naked for the Bath of Immunity scene. But both Ishiro Honda and Haynes herself just refused to do it. Mm-hmm. So, there's that. And this was the last film that Tsuburaya for Toho was actually the special effects director and not just an advisor. Mm-hmm. So, bit of history there. This was 1969, I believe. Yep, box office. Released July 26th of 1969 in Japan. Released in December of 1970 in the U.S. Like, these are Wikipedia numbers that are about to follow, so take the accuracy for what you will. Budget of 360 million yen, which was pretty hefty budget, I think, for these kind of movies at this particular point in time. Only had box office returns of 170 million yen, so big flop.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, let's listen to a trailer, then we'll come back, and we will list off the cast and crew, and I will read off my plot summary. Both of those things are quite extensive for this film. And then we'll talk about Latitude Zero. So, see you in a bit.
An experiment beneath the sea to challenge the unknown. When the forces of nature erupt, the ocean floor opens up, hurling five men and one woman 15 miles straight down to a place that exists on no map and yet holds the key to man's future. Latitude Zero. Where the past merges with the present to predict the future.
The Alpha launched June 21st, 1805.
Since you question everything, I don't expect you to believe this or much of anything else you're about to see. I am 204 years old.
The Alpha is northeast of you, on course for latitude zero.
Those are torpedoes.
No. Search vessels.
Well, do something, will you?
At Latitude Zero, good battles evil, using the incredible weapons of tomorrow.
Activate your elevation belts.
I've seen pictures of the moon that looked a lot more inviting.
Right. Say, Captain, you ever been here before?
First time.
Well, that's great. How do we find Dr. O'Connor?
We'll have to search. Could be in that tower.
Live an adventure beyond your wildest imagination as mankind fights for its very survival. Share every exciting moment of the incredible world of Latitude Zero, where man's future explodes 15 miles beneath the Earth.
All right, we're back. This film is brought to us by a lot of familiar faces, directed by Ishiro Honda, written by Shinichi Sekizawa, although I believe in the international cut, they did not credit Sekizawa. I think they credited the guy who did the radio play as the writer, but whatever. Based on the work of Ted Sherman. Music by Akira Fukube. Effects by Eiji Tsuburaya. And starring Akira Takarada, Joseph Cotton, Cesar Romero, Masumi Okada, Richard Jackal, Mari Nakayama, Patricia Medina, Akahiko Hirata, Tetsu Nakamura, Hitoshi Omei, Linda Haynes, and Hikaru Kuroki. Quite the cast. There was a lot of people in this movie. But anyway, let's read the plot summary. While investigating oceanic currents, a submersible is damaged by an undersea volcanic eruption. On board the submersible are Dr. Ken Toshiro, Dr. Jules Masson, and reporter Perry Lawton. The three are rescued by the mysterious vessel Alpha, captained by Craig McKenzie, along with his helmsman Kobo and medical doctor Ann Barton. Jules was gravely injured in the crash, so McKenzie agrees to take the men back to his utopian home of Latitude Zero. On the way, they encounter the Black Shark, a vessel captained by the sinister Captain Kroiga, who serves the evil Malik, rival of McKenzie, and Malik's lover Lucretia. McKenzie and crew manage to escape the Black Shark, and the three visitors are welcomed to Latitude Zero. Jules is nursed back to health, and all seems to be well. Meanwhile, Kroiga is imprisoned by Malik for her failure, and Malik hatches a plot to kidnap Dr. Okada and his daughter, who are planning to go to Latitude Zero to share Okada's radiation immunization formula with the people there. Malik hopes this will force McKenzie to come to him. Malik successfully kidnaps Okada, and McKenzie and crew head to the rescue. On Malik's island, the crew of the Alpha find a Dr. Moreau-type island of horrors with human-animal hybrids and lakes of acid. However, McKenzie and his friends are successful in freeing Okada, and Malik accidentally kills his lover in the scuffle. Malik escapes to the Black Shark and attempts to destroy the Alpha as it tries to leave. However, one of Malik's creations, a giant griffin with the brain of Captain Kroiga, attacks the Black Shark and helps the Alpha to destroy it. The Alpha returns to Latitude Zero, and Toshiro and Jules decide to remain there while Perry asks to return to the service. Upon his return, however, he is picked up by a ship that seems to be staffed by the people he met on his journey, and the ship's crew don't believe his story. But the crew is informed that Perry has a mysterious stash of diamonds awaiting his return to New York. As credits roll. Yes?
Yeah, it's pretty faithful.
pretty extensive.
Yeah.
Covering of this plot, I think. But accurate.
More or less.
We'll talk about some of the more ambiguous elements. But let's start with this. We had both seen this film before when I bought it back in the day. So this is both, as far as I know, our second viewing of this film. It's coming in 1969. You know, really on the other side, kind of like we said with Space Amoeba. This is a year before Space Amoeba. Or maybe a couple years. I don't remember. But it's still kind of on the other side of the golden era of tokusatsu films, Toho tokusatsu films. They were starting to go downhill. This was about the time that All Monsters Attack was released, I believe. So, yeah, it was kind of a rough time.
Yeah. But
this film, at least when they began production, clearly had higher aspirations, being an American co-production.
Mm-hmm.
All of that. We watched, as I said, the international cut, which was the longest cut.
Yeah.
It's an hour and 45 minutes. I believe the Japanese cut was about 89 minutes, which would be an hour 29. We maybe should have watched that cut, because one of my complaints about this film is it is, you know, an hour 45 is pretty average for a movie.
Yeah.
But if you go back to a lot of these Toho films of this time that we review, most of those ran like 90 minutes or less.
Oh, yeah.
At an hour 45, this one kind of
stretches. Lingers.
Yeah. It kind of plods along. Mm-hmm. But it starts out with, like I said, this, I don't know, international submersible that's going down to study some kind of ocean current or something.
Yeah.
And it's got an American and Perry Lawton. And then it's got these two Japanese crew members, and Akira Takarada and the other guy.
The other guy.
Jules is his character's name. Anyway, so there's a volcanic eruption under the sea. They get thrown around the sea floor, and then they get rescued by the Alpha, captained by McKenzie. They were there to observe the volcanic eruption.
Mm-hmm.
We have a scantily clad Dr. Barton, who is the medical doctor on the ship, and she's taking care of him. They heal the, you know, Jules and Akira Takarada. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Not Jules.
They heal Perry and, what was Takarada's character's name? Blah, 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 blah.
Doctor something.
Toshiro. They heal Toshiro and Perry, and but Jules is gravely injured, and he needs more than the ship can provide.
Yes.
So they call off their, you know,
Research
and go to Latitude Zero. But first, on their way back, they are intercepted by Black Shark, and we're introduced to the incomparable Cesar Romero. And when the film starts, it says Cesar Romero in. He's obviously the big get for this movie.
Yeah.
Now, he is, of course, most famous as the Joker in the 60s Adam West Batman TV show. Probably most famous for refusing to shave his mustache for that role. So they had to put the white paint over his mustache. So, obviously, this was on the latter stages of his career. I think I've heard at some point that he was drunk most of the time for this movie. I think that was real alcohol. Like in every scene, he's pouring himself a glass of alcohol, and I think it was all real alcohol. But you know what? He has a lot of experience in cheesy roles that he has to act in, and he brings that here, and he's hamming it up. I really like Cesar Romero in this
movie.
Maybe
because he's drunk most of the time.
Probably helps that he's wasted most of the time. And we also, I mean, we have several old Hollywood actors here. Joseph Cotton, who plays McKenzie, he was a fairly routinely active old Hollywood star. He was in Citizen Kane in a role.
Yeah.
So, you know, I recognized him. The woman that plays Lucretia, her name is, what was her name? Patricia Medina. I mean, I don't know what other movies she's been in. She looked a lot like Judy Garland to me. She's a woman that you could easily, you know, she looks like, I hate to say this, but every woman in like 1940s Hollywood. And then, of course, the Japanese. And then Landa Haynes plays Dr., what did I say? Dr. Anne, whatever. You know, she has about the acting prowess of a wooden stick.
Yeah.
But she's here to look pretty and be half naked. And she accomplishes that, I guess, more or less. And then the Japanese cast, of course, we got some of our favorites like Akira Takarada. He's great. We got briefly Akihiko Hirata's in it. So, you know. But anyway. Yeah, so we have this undersea battle with the Black Shark and the Alpha, which I think is pretty neat. We'll talk about all the effects and all that stuff later. But I enjoy this first opening battle. And then they escape. And then we get to LZ, not landing zone, Latitude Zero.
Oh.
And it's kind of like this palmy dystopia. Just kidding. It's like this, you know, presented as this like utopian society, under the sea.
Peaceful and no wars.
No wars. No real authority structure.
No.
Just everybody working together for the betterment of society. So,
nobody's power hungry there.
Yeah. Socialists. Sorry. But, you know, most films would present this utopia and then at some point in the movie, either directly or indirectly, you know, suggest or show that there's some kind of dark underbelly to this utopia.
Mm-hmm.
But they pretty much present this as a straight, full-on
utopia.
And, you know, as the typical sci-fi stuff, they have advanced medical science, advanced, you know, fake sun that gives them vitamin D and all this and that.
All this other stuff they have.
Eternal
life baths.
Oh, yeah, and everybody's really old, like, in years, but they all look whatever age they showed up there at. So the ship itself sailed in 1805, I think is what it says, the Alpha, the submarine. But anyway, this is where the movie starts to slow down. Like, it just starts to plot along, which the kind of, you know, when they first show off Latitude Zero is kind of neat and learning about it, but
yeah,
you know, it just takes us too long to get to the next action scene, which is Cesar Romero. You know, there's kind of this love triangle going on between Romero, his lover Lucretia,
mm-hmm.
and the Black Shark captain Croyga. But and there's a lot of jealousy between Lucretia and Croyga.
Yeah.
But Croyga has failed him, so like any good evil bad guy, mustache twirling bad guy, he cages her up, and then he's going to use her for his experiments later. Because he's a surgeon.
Yeah.
He's Dr. Moreau, basically. he's if you ever read or watched one of the adaptions of Dr. Moreau, he, you know, merges humans and animals into...
He takes a human brain and puts it into a tiger body. A lion.
Yeah. So he's doing these unethical experiments. He's, you know, we don't get a whole lot of backstory for any of the characters in this movie.
No,
but really. There's, it's alluded to that way back in the day, Mackenzie and Malik were
mm-hmm.
students in the same whatever. And they just kind of took different paths with their specialties. And Malik's evil now. But anyway, he kidnaps this guy, Dr. Okada, who is going to give Latitude Zero this formula to immunize people against radiation. But, you know, he wants it. Malik wants it for evil purposes.
Yeah,
and he kidnaps him. I think he kidnaps him not so much because he wants that formula, but he wants to... His whole main goal is to kill Mackenzie.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that this will bring Mackenzie to him because the Black Shark has proven that it's not able to destroy his alpha. So Mackenzie takes these newcomers and they go on a rescue mission. And, you know, again, it takes a little long to get there. And then this island stuff is not as good as the submarine battles.
No.
There's a lot of really cheesy elements that we'll talk about more in the effects section. But they run around on this island for a while. It looks cheap. And, you know, Malik has, by this point, taken the brain out of Croyga and put it into this griffin, this lion, hawk, human hybrid thing. Anyway, they go and rescue Okada. During the fight, Malik accidentally stabs Lucretia.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a tender moment where he's like, I didn't mean to. And she's like, I know.
Like Han Solo over here. Yeah.
And this is where there's a lot of weird stuff start happening that doesn't get explained. Like Lucretia, like, collapses into a pile of dust. I don't know if that was to suggest that she was, like, actually super old and she was... All her age was catching up to her once she died. I don't know what that was supposed to suggest. There's a scene. They get back to the Alpha. Malik goes to the Black Shark. He, like, blows up a side of a cliff and these, like, golden flakes fall on the Alpha and mess it up.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they were magnetic or something. It messes with their electrical systems or something. I don't really understand what's happening at this point.
It's a little weird.
But the Griffin, who has the mind of Croyga, and of course, Croyga's PO'd at
Malik.
So it helps the Alpha to destroy the
Black Shark.
The Black Shark, and, you know, the Alpha goes free, and they go back to Latitude Zero, and
the photographer guy decides he wants to go back to the real world.
Yeah. So he goes back. Picked up by this JSDF ship that's there to observe a satellite landing or something. I don't remember.
Some space thing.
Spacecraft, something. Mm-hmm. But it's staffed by all these people who look mysteriously like all these people he's met on his journey. So they try to do like this ambiguous ending where it's like, did this guy imagine all this? But they also have the, like, oh, those diamonds that he had in his bag. He picked them up from Mackenzie earlier.
Yeah.
Like, they were sent to a bank in New York. And so
he's actually really rich.
Yeah, so did it happen? Did it not happen? Left up for interpretation. Also kind of makes for a nonsensical ending. But, yeah. You know what? They tried. They tried the ambiguous ending. I'll give them credit for that.
Kind of failed.
But whatever. You know, so I guess basically as far as the plot and acting and all that goes, you know, a lot of it's pretty typical for what you would expect out of Toho at this time. There's some hammy acting. There's a kind of weird mix of Japanese and English actors. There's, although it kind of works in this film because they were all speaking English when they were filming. So it merges a little better than other movies. But like I said, at an hour 45, it does drag in several places. Maybe if we had watched the 90-minute cut, it would have been better. But we didn't. You know, I like Cesar Romero and his hammy performance. Other actors, I feel like, are playing it a little too straight. It's kind of funny that they didn't even dub Kobo. Like Kobo, I guess.
Yeah.
They wanted to portray him as like this kind of simple, I don't know, native person. Mm-hmm. They didn't even dub his line. He speaks very little. That's kind of funny. But, you know, I mean, some of it was like so cheesy. It was fun with like the love triangle between Malik and Koige and all that. But again, I wish the face was faster. And I kind of wish that they would explain some of the stuff, especially towards the end. That was kind of like, what?
I don't think they even knew what was going on towards the end.
No. And I think it was a troubled production. I think, you know, it was supposed to be this big co-production. The American producers went bankrupt about the time the movie was being made. And I think there were, and I think you see this in the effects, there were times when I think they expected to have money where they didn't.
Yeah.
So I think that probably hampered production, but, you know.
Yeah, it happens to the best of us.
It does happen. But you want to talk about vehicle / creature design?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the Alpha. It's kind of like the Atragon, but without the drill.
It's, and a little more roomy, it seems.
Yeah, it's kind of presented like, you're right, it's kind of a bigger inside. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Atragon was kind of presented more of like a traditional interior of a submarine.
Yeah.
But this is all roomy and stuff. It's, like I said, it's kind of like your typical kind of sci-fi submarine design, kind of aerodynamic and long. And it kind of has like these, almost like Enterprise, like engines on the back and...
It has all this fancy technology and gadgets on it.
Yeah, it's kind of gray in color. And then the Black Shark is basically the same design, but black.
Yeah.
I think, but...
It's a little bit more submarine.
Yeah, they got the spy scope or whatever and the all that. And kind of the more traditional, what you think of as a more traditional submarine bridge.
Yeah.
And all that on the interior. Creatures, we have the bat people, which are, you know, really bad monkey suits with wings.
I thought they were monkeys for a second. I'm not gonna lie.
They were like the flying monkeys from Wizard of Oz. Yeah.
Just growing a little.
We have the rat people, which are just man-sized rat costumes. And then the griffin. It starts out as a lion.
And a condor.
And then they merge him into a griffin, which is a lion with wings.
With a human brain.
With a human brain. And then he can... It's technically a giant creature, falls into our realm because he gives it this thing, which turns it three times its normal size. So there you go.
Those are giant rat people.
Yeah, they were man-sized rat people. You're right. So falls within our... purview.
Barely.
But yeah, like I said, all the stuff on the island is bad. And getting into effects again, I think the submarine stuff is some of Toho's better submarine stuff. I don't have any real complaints with the submarine scenes and the action scenes underwater and all that stuff. You know, the compositing shots are kind of hit and miss, But they always were, even with the best of the movies with this era. Yeah. But once we get to the island, their lack of budget is very apparent. The suits are terrible. I mean, I've seen better lion furry costumes than this lion costume they got.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally just a guy on his hands and knees in a really cheap lion costume.
They got that at the Dollar Tree, it looked like.
Yeah, same thing with the rat people and the monkey people. And yeah, it just really bad. Now, of course, they do have their classic oil effect volcanic eruption, which is really neat. You know, the miniature work in Latitude Zero, I think, is pretty good with the dock and all that. And I think they do, considering their budget and the time this was made, the limitations that created, I think they do a pretty decent job of creating a sense of scale for these submarines and all of this. So, you know, no complaints there. But yeah, everything to do with the island and the creatures is
not
bad.
Good.
The set in general just kind of looks cheap. It's just bad. So,
to be fair, they did lose their American production company.
Yeah, I figure when they got to filming this part is when they probably ran out of money. Because it's bad. But, and then score, it's Tsukube Bay. Not really one of his more memorable scores, because I'm honestly struggling to recall what the music was in the movie. I mean, it wasn't bad.
No.
But nor was it like his normal, like, really stand out bombastic score.
It just fit the movie.
Fit the movie. You know, so there's that.
Yeah.
But anyway, you ready for some final thoughts in the letter grade?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you start?
Final thoughts, you know. It was an okay movie for what it was, you know. They had some good actors in it. Some of the better ones that Toho and the American people had at the time. Even though some of them were drunk through most of this movie, filming it. Probably made this film more tolerable, honestly. But yeah, the effects in this movie weren't terrible towards the beginning of the film, but as the movie went on, you could tell the budgetary restraints essentially on the island, really, where they really struggled with their effects. Costumes and acid lakes and all that were questionable.
Yeah.
But, you know, score in this movie, it was alright. It wasn't memorable at anything, but it fit the movie. It fit it pretty well. And, you know, I think I'll give this movie a C+.
A C+. Alright. Yeah, you know, if this was the first time I was watching this movie, and you stopped it at like the 25-minute mark, I'd be like, oh, this movie could pretty easily end up in the B range. You know, that's like right after the submarine battle and all of that stuff. But as it goes on, it kind of trends downwards. You know, we kind of have the plotting parts in Latitude Zero and the plotting to kidnap the doctor and all that. And then when we get to the island and the effects take an absolute nosedive, and you start seeing all these people running around in these super cheap suits. Yeah, it goes downhill. You know, but ultimately, I will say this. It's a movie definitely of its era. I think there's some really good, for Toho at the time, submarine sequences in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's some, you know, it's interesting to see these old school Hollywood actors mixing with these old school Toho actors, and Cesar Romero is hamming it up, chewing scenery like nobody's business, and so are a couple of the other actors and actresses. You know, it's if you like old movies like this, you know, there's quite a bit to enjoy here, but there's also a lot of drawbacks that keep it from being in the upper echelon of the movies of this era. So I'll give it a C. It's, you know, it's fine. If it was, like I said, if we'd watched the Japanese cut, which is like 15 minutes shorter, I might have considered bumping this grade up a little bit. I'd have to see how it was edited together. I do need to go back and watch that at some point.
Yeah.
But yeah, an hour 45, it does overstay its welcome a little bit.
Yeah.
But anyway,
But anyway.
News. There is a bit of news I wanted to talk about. Specifically, they held the Japanese Academy Awards, I believe, overnight last night. So let me pull up the list and let's see how Godzilla Minus One did. So here we have the list. And so let me start. So the categories that they were nominated in but did not win were Best Director, Best Actor, Best Actress, and Best Music. Those were nominations. And then wins were the following: Best Picture, Best Screenplay, Best Supporting Actress, Best Cinematography, Best Lighting, Best Art Direction, Best Sound, and Best Editing. So, basically, almost the sweep of Japanese Oscars. Did very well, much like Shin Godzilla. So, congratulations to Minus One. Of course, they will be doing the U.S. Oscars. When is that? Next weekend? The weekend after? I don't know exactly when. And I think most outlets are predicting that it will probably win the Oscar for Best Effects. So, look at that.
Look at Godzilla.
Go Godzilla, baby. But
first Oscar in the U.S.
Yes. So, we, for next week, are going to be reviewing a film that I have not seen. I do not believe Andrew has seen. It is a listener request. We'll be reviewing Netflix's animated film, The Sea Beast.
Ooh.
So, I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
You know, it was a movie that really flew under the radar, but got a lot of critical acclaim. So, we'll be visiting it for the first time. And excited about that. So, join us next week for that. But don't forget that you can always contact us and send us more suggestions of movies you may want us to cover at stompthisway1954@gmail.com. We also have a website. Andrew, where's that at?
That website's at stompthisway.wordpress.com.
That's right. And you can see over there the schedule through the end of March. I need to add some movies beyond that point, but I'll work on that later. And also, don't forget that you can find us on Facebook, where I post once a week that we have recorded an episode, or published an episode. So, other than that, I believe that's all we got you. That's all we got for you this week. So, as always, thank you for listening. I'm Aaron.
I'm Andrew.
And we'll see you in the next one.